Notice if you are oriented to where you are, grounded in where you are, and are you sensing yourself? Or is your attention out there? Are your attention particles somewhere else? Where your attention goes, your energy flows. That's how it goes. Or, as we've said many times, for those of you who have heard me say it many times, what you pay attention to grows. So if we keep paying attention to distractions, meaning scrolling on social media, endless little sparkles out there, we'll be distracted. So, placing one of your index finger and your middle finger on the heart point, that center point of your heart. And notice what is moving through right now. One way that I have mentioned to those of you who have been on bridge calls with me, and this is a really good place to start every morning, pretend you just arrived here. Pretend you just arrived here. No past, no future. Pretend you just arrived here. Nothing to compare this moment to. Nothing to feel bad about. No shoulds, no shouldn'ts. If you just arrived here, you might not and probably wouldn't know the names for many things. It would be new. You would be new. Pretend you just arrived here. You can do that multiple times a day. Sometimes when I feel spacey or distracted or I'm caught in a story, I do that 50 times a day. I tell myself, pretend you just arrived here. And every time I do it, there's a freshness. There's a newness. Nothing's wrong. So pretend you just arrived here. You might not know your name, but would it matter? So in this moment, if you pretend you just arrived here, there'd be nothing to fix, change, improve, get rid of. Everything, including you, would be the way it is and you are, with an isness to it, a simplicity to it. It just is the way it is. It is the way it is. Nothing to change, nothing to improve. If there's an ache in the knee or an ache in the neck, contraction in your back, a stiffness, anywhere at all, no problem. You are not accepting, but allowing. Allowing everything to be as it is. There's a big difference between accepting and allowing. Accepting has a bit of a, well, all right. Allowing is expansive. There's room for everything without judgment. We spend so much of our time in our lives trying to have things fit our ideas of how they're supposed to look and fit and be. It's exhausting. So in this moment, nothing to change or fix. Nothing to mold or fit into. What happens in you, sensation-wise, when there's no fight? When you're not pushing against. When you're not trying. So Judy, we have the six steps, yeah? We don't need them at this very second, but I want to talk about, we're going to do a writing inquiry this afternoon. First of all, before we do that, let me check in with you and see how you're doing with forgiveness. How your afternoon was. Is there anybody would like to say anything? What you're seeing, noticing, understanding? Orlena?
You have a suggestion of
Do you have a suggestion for asking for a friend? Do you have a suggestion for...
It's never a good idea to ask for a friend.
It's a joke. it's a joke. That's a joke?
Yes.
I
don't think I got it.
Okay, that's okay. That's fine.
I'll start again. Because it's really for you?
Yes, absolutely.
Because everybody says, it's not me, I'm asking for a friend.
Exactly. That's the joke.
Okay, got it. Took me a while, but I caught on.
I apologize. Okay, so begin again. Do you have a suggestion for the idea of forgiveness of self for the conclusions that we've drawn about ourselves? If we can't get to the forgiveness because we haven't gotten past the idea that perhaps the conclusion is not false?
Yeah, so we'll work on that this afternoon in the writing inquiry we do. Thank you. That's a place where a lot of people do get stopped because we believe the conclusions, which just really shows how brainwashed and enspelled we have become, entranced into believing that something is wrong with us. It's a spell. Imagine that a spell has been put over you to believe a lie. And it's complete, because when you start questioning the lie, it feels like it's not a lie. It feels like it's not a lie. You know, I'll say a few things before we do the writing inquiry on the steps and on forgiveness. So we'll be working more with forgiveness. There is no way for a child to believe it's not about her. There just isn't any way. It's just impossible. Because babies, children, to a baby and a child, they're the whole world. They're the whole world. Before there's a lot of external references, I'm the world. I'm it. And when a caretaker, and I'm it, and utterly dependent on externals, utterly dependent on externals, and that's how it goes. And so when a caretaker, because of his or her own limitations, communicates, or even doesn't communicate, I've used this example before, your mother doesn't pick you up at kindergarten, and something's wrong with me. She forgot about me. First it's I'm abandoned, and then something's wrong with me. A child can't help that, but believe that. Can't help it. So we get, and then that gets validated and affirmed and reflected in a thousand different ways. Because of the externalization, the outsourcing of identity, of who we are gets outsourced. Caretakers, family, friends, school, no questions now. Social media, television, I mean, just on and on and on and on and on and on and on, where we just have it keep reflecting we're not good enough. So it becomes our work as adults to question the lie. That's what I was saying this morning. So take out your pens and paper. We have paper. And Judy, can you hand me the 6-step sheet? We have one for everybody. Thank you. All right. So for those of you who haven't heard me talk about the 6 steps before, or for those of you who have, I'm going to say it again. It's the technology we use. I talked about this last night, that our work is on 2 dimensions. Our work is on the dimension of awareness, of awake awareness of who we naturally are, the luminosity, the clarity, the spaciousness, the blue skyness of our nature, and on what occludes that. So we work on 2 dimensions. The 6 steps are the most effective technology that I've discovered in the last many, many years, and I've done a lot of different processes in quite a few different schools and schools of thought, and it just gets right to it. And so that's what I'm interested in, right to it. So who isn't familiar with the 6 steps? Okay, so you know, Judy, why don't you just give it around those sheets so everybody can have one, because the writing inquiry will be based. If you've already taken them. If you already know what they are, you don't need to have a sheet about them because you already know what they are. Lisa, do you need one? Well, I'm going to go over them. So we want to continue with the work on forgiveness. That's what the writing inquiry will be about. Now, I'm going to ask you to write for 20 minutes. And I'm going to ask you to do the 6 steps in your writing inquiry on a triggering event. So I am upset. What precedes I am upset is that I'm triggered. Something happened, and I got triggered, and I'm upset. So somebody said something to me. Somebody did something. Somebody cut me off in my group the other night, or cut me off in the freeway, or, you know, my friend ghosted me. Or a friend just hasn't called me back for days. I don't know whether she's ghosted me or not, but whatever it is, I'm triggered by that. So I'm triggered. An event happened. A triggering event happened. The next step. The 2 steps that are the hardest steps here are this is about me and the forgiveness. This says embrace the truth about me. I would cross that out. You don't have to, because I would call it forgiveness and awareness as the sixth step. Forgiving myself for believing a lie. That's also the same as embrace the truth about me. It's just a little clearer. And you say forgiving myself for believing a lie, because the truth is that I am presence itself. I am clarity. I am so. This is, in a way, the same thing. So, me, this is about me. That is a challenging turn to make. Because if somebody, and I've used this example with you many, many times since my best friend stopped talking to me when I got back from radiation. Best friend for 20 years, talked all the time, 3 times a week for 20 years. Womp. Nothing. And you could call that brutal, horrible, terrible, mean, give it a lot of descriptors, not explaining to me what was going on. And there was nobody that I talked to about that, and I didn't talk to anybody for quite a while about it, not even Matt, because I knew people would blame her. And I wanted to look and see what was going on with me first. It didn't help to blame her. It didn't help to say, what a shit. It happened. It didn't help. It doesn't help to blame somebody else, to think it's about them. It doesn't further anything to start putting the blame out there. It furthers nothing. No understanding, no compassion, no kindness, no nothing. Once it's out there and it's about them, what's your work? What's left for you to do? Deal with the hurt and the rage? Well, yes, but look and see, it's about me. Now, it would have been obvious, and I've said this before, or it would have been apparent to other people, well, it's about her, blah, blah, blah. Look what she did. She's done it before. She had a whole history of relationships where she did the exact same thing. It's about her. It's about her craziness. It's about she had never been in therapy before. She believed all of her opinions. All that, I could say it's about her. But then when I turn it back on myself and not the blame, I'm not talking about blame. So when you do this writing, and I'm going to give you 20 minutes to do it, I had to ask myself, what's the first lie I told myself about her? What was my part here? What was my part here? It's about me means what's my part, as excruciating as it was, and as comfortable excruciating as it was to blame her, to ask myself, what did I know that I didn't want to know? What did I know that I didn't want to know? What was the lie I told myself? What was the series of lies I told myself about her, about our relationship? I watched her do this probably with 3 or 4 other people. I told myself it was never going to happen to me. I questioned her about what she was doing. It sounded crazy to me what she was doing, but somehow I was able to compartmentalize. those have to do with that one and that one and that one. Didn't have to do with her, even though nothing she said about any of those people made any sense because I knew them all. So I didn't quite get it. But still, I wouldn't let myself know the truth. When's the first, what's the first lie I told myself? A series of lies. Then as I did the work, as I did the six steps, me, this is about me, focus on the feeling. The feeling was of being wronged. The feeling was in being, well, really, really hurt. But when I asked myself, which is remember the feeling, when that had happened much earlier, what was the earlier example of when that happened? I went immediately back to my father. Immediately, which I hadn't really done before, which was how I compartmentalized what he did and made excuses for him over and over and over again in the same way that I made excuses for my friend Christine. Oh, it's not really that bad. Oh, he's that, but he really loves me. I'm his favorite. Christine would never do that to me. I'm special. Disregarding the flagrant truth. Disregarding it. Lying to myself. It's about me. I lied to myself. I didn't let myself see what I saw, feel what I felt, know what I knew. It's about me. That was really hard to swallow. To be, now there's a difference I want to say between being responsible and being accountable. So I wasn't accountable to myself. I mean, you could say I wasn't responsible, but I like responsibility feels like I'm in fifth grade again. Accountable to the truth of what I saw, allowing myself to feel the truth of what I actually saw and knew, it's still hard. This happened 5 years ago. Am I over it most of the time? Yeah, but 3 weeks ago I heard she came into town. She lives across the world. She came into town. She stayed with this friend and she stayed with that friend and she never called me. Now, here's the truth. I already knew our relationship was over before it was over because if I told myself the absolute truth, I didn't want to be friends with somebody like that. I didn't want to. Now, it didn't mean I had to be mean, and it didn't mean I had to, you know, say horrible things to her, but I also had a pattern of, I don't want to leave possible love. If I close the door on love, there might not be any more of it. I remember when my boyfriend from college, who I'm still friends with, I was in a relationship with him for 9 years, and we were such close friends. He's the one that encouraged me to write, and when I wanted to go to India, he was very encouraging about the whole thing and all that. When he asked me to marry him, when I got back from India, I had a dream that night that I was in prison. And I thought, not a good thing to do. I can't. But I couldn't break up with him. I never really said to him, it's over. We're done. he wandered away and fell in love and married someone else and had kids, but I never made a clean break. I didn't want to be the one who left. I didn't want to be that one. And I did the same thing with Christine. Who wants to be friends with somebody who ends her friendships, who takes her opinion seriously, who doesn't ever think she's ever done anything questionable? I mean, there were 10 different reasons why I knew that we had outgrown. Sometimes you actually outgrow people. Relationships end. The resonance between you is over. Of course it has to be. How could you be friends with the same person? Now, I do have, you know, one friend from high school, two friends from college, still. But there are particular patterns. These are not people I would become instant friends with now. I love our relationship. But I talk to them, well, my best friend from college I talk to often. Well, not often, every couple weeks. I don't know how often that is. But, you know, we laugh. She knows my mother. She knows my, you know, she knows the whole mishpucha. She knows everybody. She's the one who hung up on my mother and father. We were roommates in college. Every time they called when they were getting divorced, they called me multiple times a day crying. She'd pick up the phone and she'd say, "Stop calling her." Bam. And, you know, she did that multiple times. She's the one who threw away my diet pills when she found out I was addicted to diet pills. She's the one who's, you know, comes out used to. She hasn't seen my mother since my mother's enlightened. She doesn't know this version of my mother yet. But we'd go to visit my mother and stepfather, and she'd always drive from the city and spend the day with me, and we'd get back into the car where she would be driving me back into the city where she lives. She'd grab my hand, and she'd say to me, "You know they're crazy, don't you?" I've told you this before, but I didn't. I didn't know that. It took her telling me that because I'd get entranced again into the family system. Now, I mean, this happened at least 15 years ago, but I'll never forget her grabbing me in her car. Her, you know, gazillion mile BMW 2002 BMW that had, I don't know, so many miles. She drove it into the ground. That's what we were sitting in when she said, "They're crazy. Both of them. Your stepfather and your mother." And I thought they were paragons at that point. So it does help sometimes to have friends that are that old, who have known you that long, but we have enough in common. I'm not friends with any of my other friends then. The resonance that you feel ends. Relationships end. That's what happens. They're not meant to last forever. But nobody told me that. I'm hoping somebody told you that, and if they didn't, I'm telling you. So I remembered the feeling of compartmentalizing my dad's behavior with me and watching him with my mother and brother and just dissociating. Just basically, I almost became catatonic. Just shut down. Didn't feel a thing. Not a thing. I probably did a similar thing, though not as dramatic, with Christine. I remember thinking, this is not normal behavior. This is not normal. Now, I don't know many normal people, so I'm not surprised that it wasn't normal, but it wasn't. It was really outlier behavior to end all these relationships. To never consider that your opinion is wrong. to move every 2 years, move countries and do this and do that, and not be interested in why. So I knew it. And then I was surprised when she left the relationship. So I knew the relationship was over. I knew I wanted to be out of the relationship, and still, she left, and I was betrayed. Really? Really? It wasn't a time to be unkind to myself, but it was really a time to tell the truth. Remember the feeling? I remembered the feeling with my dad. Establish what my judgment of myself was at that moment. Something is wrong with me. Something's wrong with me. I'm damaged. I need love. I cannot turn it away. I'm bad. I'm damaged. Embrace the truth about me. This is where the forgiveness, this is where I'd like you to, when you're writing about it, write about the forgiveness that we did this morning. I forgive you. And in terms of what Marlena asked, if you don't feel it, live as if you do. Imagine you do. Imagine you do. Until you live into it. How are you supposed to feel it if you were taught that it was true? You live as if you believe. You live as if you know that you're worth every ounce of love. You live as if. Embrace the truth about me is the forgiveness. I forgive myself forever believing that I was unworthy. That I was not worth the love. That I was not worth being in a relationship with somebody who sees me. I forgive myself for believing that I am damaged at the core. I forgive myself. And as you're writing this, feel into what you did this morning, putting yourself in the center of your heart, in that heart point, I forgive myself. Okay, everybody, so you're going to go for 20 minutes, and you're going to start, before you start writing, just sit for a minute, and just notice what you've been triggered by in the last week. And here's the second part, how you have been harsh with yourself about it. So it's not just I'm triggered. The second part of that is the harshness, what you're telling yourself. Trish talked about it this morning when she said about the steps. I only did X amount of steps. I didn't do the 5,000, whatever that was, steps. What's wrong with me? The lack of forgiveness that we show ourselves is staggering. It's staggering. And what we're doing now is getting underneath that. We have to start somewhere. And not only do we have to start somewhere, for those of you who have been doing this with me for a while, we have to keep going. It's not about stopping. It's about going until, like going around the circle of a spiral or the spirals of a spiral. And each time you see it from a different level and a different place and there's a different view. As viewed, so appears. So you're seeing it from a different view. But we're getting into and underneath so that it becomes transparent. That conclusion that you have about yourself, the way you don't forgive yourself. When you think about it, you know, I'm thinking about it now, I'm just sitting here, just considering this. It's so painful to hold yourself out of your own heart. It's so painful to hold yourself out of your heart. I can feel it with myself. So painful. Okay, so you're going to come up with, you're going to remember a trigger, something that happened, and your response was that you were harsh with yourself. But I want you to go through these steps because this is the process. So write about what it feels like. To say with my friend Christine that this is about me was really tough. Really tough. I did not want to say it was about me. It was like falling on a sword. It was so apparent she was mean and insane. When somebody does something apparently mean and insane, the last thing you want to do is say it's about me. But you are doomed to keep repeating it and drawing that same energy over and over and over again until you learn what the nub of that lesson was. And I'm putting lesson in quotes. Until you get underneath there. For me, it was about seeing the truth and letting myself know what was true. Have my experience, have confidence in what I saw and knew and felt. And not compartmentalize. And then forgiving myself. Because when Christine ended her relationship with me, I felt like I deserved it. I felt like she was seeing something that I was hiding. Some bad, awful part of myself, which is the reason I didn't tell Matt about it, because I was afraid after 36 years or 5 years, whenever this happened, that he was going to finally see the truth about me and not want to be with me. That whatever Christine saw, he was going to see. Finally, that I had been successful at hiding it from him. And that her rejection of me was going to bring it up. That it was out in the open now. That's how deep the shame was. And the belief that I was someone who deserved to be treated like that. And if you had asked me in 2018, the year before this happened, actually it happened in 2020, if you had asked me if any of this was true, I would have said no. It took that to bring this up. Okay, everybody, 20 minutes. 20 minutes of going through the steps. 20 minutes. So I'd like you to find a partner, please. I'd like you to find a partner. And I'd like you to tell your partner, one of you will go first, obviously, and speak. Speak for 3 minutes about what you now know that you might not have wanted to know. What you know now that you might not have wanted to know. And if that's too much of a mind twister, what did you see in doing the inquiry about forgiving yourself? All right, please go. All right, we're going to get back together again. So I'd like to go around the room now and have everybody say a word about where they are right now. We don't need the mic, Judy. It's just, it'd be too cumbersome at this point. Matt told me about a process that he does sometimes with his group. It's called the GLAD technique. I don't think we have time for that. However, I was reading it. He sent it to me, but it seems like it's going to take a while, and you all have miles to go before you sleep. You have a meal to eat and a meditation to do, and then sleep. So I don't want to keep you. Although I do love being with you. However, I would still like to hear from every one of you with a word about where you are right now. And it could be, I'll adapt a little bit from Matt's. It could be something you're grateful for about today, could be something you learned from today, and it could be something that delighted you today and something you appreciated. One of those, not all of those. Something you're grateful for, something you learned, something you appreciated, something that delighted you. Well, okay, a sentence. Okay, who wants to go? Kathy, why don't you start? And so everybody, not everybody has to say what you're grateful for, I'm just saying. It could be something you learned. It could be something that you're appreciating about yourself or somebody else about being here. It could be something that delighted you or none of the above. Okay, so we're going to do a couple minute sit. Before we do, I know the next activity might be eating if you're hungry. So I would urge you to check in with your hunger levels before you eat, to have those eating guidelines with you, and to notice which ones you're following and which ones you really don't want to follow. And I think the other thing that I would say is take the opportunity and use the energy of the vortex of the field to inquire into how you're doing vis-a-vis forgiveness in terms of yourself. And you know, it's very hard to truly forgive somebody else if you don't forgive yourself. You can act like you are. You can say, I forgive you. If there's something that you're holding on to, some way you feel undeserving or unworthy or not enough or irrelevant or damaged, it's hard for that heart to be totally open. Because there's that little squeeze. There's that little part that believes she doesn't deserve to. She's not allowed to. She's not really lovable. Really lovable. So I think the most, I don't know what the adjective is, but how to use your time while you're here and you've got the energy of the field. It's kind of like the wind at your back. You've got the energy of this field working with and for you. It's precious energy. It's exponential, geometric, inquiring, loving energy. Use it tonight. You still have tomorrow and tomorrow night, but this marks halfway done. This marks halfway done. So I remember at the end of the multiple 10-day meditation retreats that I used to do, the 10-day silent retreats, at the end of every day during the last session of the day, and there were, I don't know, 15, 45-minute sessions, I remember Joseph Goldstein in particular would say, okay then, this is the last sitting of the day. Really use that energy for yourself. So I'm not saying this is the last sitting of the day, but I am saying you've got this whole beautiful evening and a whole night of sleep and dreams. Use it. Use it. Really, allow yourself to be awake in it, to be aware of it, and to go deep into what you really, really want the most. Because it's yours for the asking, it's yours for the having, it's yours for the acting, it's yours for the doing, it's yours for the being. You've got this chance right now. Of course, you have 1,000 other chances, but you have this chance now at the end of a very rich day. Imagine we've been making a pot of soup, and here we are. It's a very rich, rich blend. Really rich. Happens after a day of doing it, a day and a night. Last night. So use it before it's time to start all over again.